Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Anawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tahiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, welcome to Prophecy Keepers today, folks. I'd like to introduce to you Mark Amaru Kikum. And Mark is the author of the, is it the Return of the Serpent of Wisdom? Is that correct, Mark?
That's right. Return of the Serpent of Wisdom, as well as Conversations with the Goddess, The Truth, Mind, and Christ Myth, and I'll have a book coming out in June called Guardians of the Holy Grail, The Knights Templar, John the Baptist, and the Water of Life.
Excellent. I've spent some time on you. Actually, before I knew we had a mutual friend, I spent some time on your website. You've got some excellent links in there, you know, having to do with the Grail
thank you.
The Templar Knight stuff is fascinating.
Well, that's what's really popular right now. There is obviously a huge revival in Templarism right now, and a lot of that, of course, is spearheaded by the popularity of the Da Vinci Code, which apparently everybody's reading, which is certainly helping me right now, because one thing that I'm doing is I'm working with Ian Sinclair, who's part of the Sinclair clan that built Roslyn Chapel, and together we are reviving old Gnostic Templarism, which we believe is the original form of the Templars. And it involves utilizing some Gnostic practices, alchemical practices, yoga, meditation. things that we believe that the Templars learned during their 100 years in the Middle East, and they brought back these practices into Europe. And of course, as soon as the Catholic Church heard about them, then they were considered heretics and promptly burned at the stake or imprisoned and tortured. And so that was the end of those practices. So what we are doing now is we're reviving them. You know, we're bringing them back to the world. And so we're trying to revive Templarism as we believe it was originally, which today has become very, well, patriarchal, very right-wing, very fundamentalist.
Unbalanced.
Fundamentalist ideology, very Christian-oriented. And so what we're doing is, in a sense, is we're reinfusing the goddess and her tradition back into Templarism. And one of the symbols of the goddess that the Templars did worship was the Black Madonna and Mary Magdalene. So, in terms of prophecies and what's coming up now and in the future, this is all in accordance with the revival of the goddess tradition that we're experiencing today on the planet, and which involves the awakening or reawakening and revival of intuition and love and sensitivity and connectedness within all of us, as well as connecting with the earth, the form of the goddess, rather than separating ourselves and becoming very nationalistic and becoming very territorial. The goddess, the revival of the goddess, is about coming back together as one planetary family. And the revival of the goddess is also about reviving the mysteries, the esoteric mysteries, because her tradition, with the revival of patriarchy, her tradition had to go underground and become secretive. And when that happened, it became the mystery school tradition. So basically, all the secrets of the mystery schools around the world that are being popularized again, that are coming into awareness again. This is the secrets of the goddess herself. So the Gnostic Templarism is that aspect of Templarism that is directly related to the goddess tradition. It's all part of her revival right now. And all my work has been related to the goddess. My books, The Return of Serpents of Wisdom, Conversations with the Goddess, Truth, Mind, and Christ, they're all related to the esoteric history of the goddess tradition.
Outstanding.
Even the second book that I wrote on the goddess, Conversations with the Goddess, it was basically her talking to me for a couple of years, just feeding me this information about her tradition, its history, its concept of patriarchy, and its revival now. And she just started talking to me one day up in the mountains of Washington. And that was the beginning of it. That day I was going up to something that was might sound a little strange to some people, which was basically to find Lucifer, to discover Lucifer. But the way I perceive Lucifer is basically my dark side. So for me, it was embracing, finding Lucifer and embracing my own dark side. But in the process, as I was searching for Lucifer, this voice started talking to me and said, "Well, are you looking for Lucifer to persecute him, as he has been for so long? He's looking for my son to persecute him more, as he has been for thousands of years." And of course, my reaction to that is, no, I didn't have any intention to persecute anything or anybody. And of course, my second question was, who are you anyway? And then the voice said, "Well, I'm the one you've been worshiping for so long." And of course, at that point, I know it's God, is because she was my principal deity at the time. And then she, for the next 2 years,
I see parallel with what's going on with in your school with both in the Hopi prophecy and in the Bible, because we Bible believers believe we're living in the last days, and of course, correspondingly, the Bible says that this is the time of the restitution of all things spoken of by all the mouths of all the holy prophets, and of course that would mean all the ones that didn't get written up. And of course the Hopi prophecy talked about that all the old medicine societies that were lost would be restored at this time. And the Hopi prophecy and the Bible are basically mirror images of each other. And you've got so much restoration going on. So the other thing is, you know, a lot of, you know, Christians tend to look at traditional people and say, oh, they're superstitious. But you mention a saint to a Christian, and immediately, you know, oh, that's bad. Well, and I said, well, if that's bad, then when Israel was bitten by fiery serpents, why did they put a brazen serpent on a stick and tell them all they had to do was look to be healed? And people don't understand that the serpent symbol may actually have been usurped by Lucifer or the devil or whoever. It may have actually belonged to the Creator himself first, or whatever aspect of the Creator. And it's just like the name of the morning star, you know, is a matter of confusion or whatever. But it's certainly something to take a look at and get your attention when you start talking about serpents.
Absolutely. And of course, there's a whole mythology about around the serpent. But of course, in the pre-Christian tradition, the serpent was always recognized as a symbol of power and wisdom.
Wisdom.
And that's essentially what the god of himself personified, with the wisdom and the power of God. According to the old ideologies, the goddess was emanated from the god at the beginning of time. It was Shakti emanating from Shiva as his power and his wisdom. And at first that emanation manifested as life force, as prana, as chi. And over time it condensed, it contracted, it solidified, and became all the physical forms of the physical universe. So basically, the whole physical universe is the form of the goddess herself. And the god that emanated the goddess still exists, but on a transcendental plane. You know,
mm-hmm.
He's just kind of behind the creation, but the goddess is the creation.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, the serpent itself is a very deep and very ancient understanding. The Egyptians actually looked at the serpent. Some of them looked at it as not very favorably, believe it or not, because what they said is that the serpent brought duality into the world. You know, and it did in a sense because it created separation between spirit and matter. When spirit emanated part of himself to become the goddess, it created a duality between God and goddess, spirit and matter. Okay? So that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at that is that the serpent is Kundalini, is the evolutionary force. And according to the esoteric teachings, the masters that came with the knowledge of Kundalini originally, they came from Venus, which is the planet of the goddess, and they came with the wisdom of how to awaken this energy, how to awaken the Kundalini energy. The reason they came, and these are the sons of God we're talking about, the sons of God that married the daughters of men, they came because humanity at that time was ready to make an evolutionary leap, all right? And to make any kind of evolutionary leap, we need the assistance. We need that force, that Kundalini force, to make the changes within us, to evolve us, right? So we needed that energy awakened as a planetary population, but we didn't really know how to do it. These masters that came knew how to do it. They had mastered Kundalini. They had mastered alchemy, they didn't have a very strong intellect. They functioned more on intuition. They were more feeling more connected to each other and the earth, and there wasn't a strong sense of ego or self or a strong intellect that differentiated and categorized things. And so when the Kumaras came here, they showed us how to awaken the Kundalini so that the Kundalini could do the work of developing our higher brain functions, such as, you know, the functions of intellect, right? And it's through intellect that we have come to, that we have moved into a species that exists in duality, that intellect that divides, that sees the polarity, that sees the good and the bad and the up and the down, that separates and divides. And so from that sense, you could say that there again, that the Kundalini serpent on the tree, brought duality into the world by helping us to develop these higher brain functions. And some to the serpent on the tree, the deity or the patron of the intellect, the spirit of the intellect, because he brought the intellect to us by developing the higher brain functions.
So let me ask you, how far back do you think, of course, you know, the Caduceus symbol is the two snakes intertwined.
Right.
And maybe you could comment on that, how far back that might go. And the other thing I was curious about, what did you call the name of the master? Did you call him the Kumara?
Yeah, Kumara, or Kumara is a plural. That's a Sanskrit name, which means basically sons of God.
That's interesting because the community in the mountains where the people were living more of a fullness of what Jesus was trying to teach, even before Jesus came, was Qumran.
Oh, right, Qumran, yeah, that's right.
See, there's no coincidences, you know.
No, there's no coincidences.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Yeah, definitely connected.
Because those people, they lived all things common, at least one common meal a day. They did ritual bathing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that there's definitely a connection between these cultures. Well, I know that there is, and this lineage or this brotherhood of the sons of God. There's no question that there's a connection. In fact, I know for a fact that John the Baptist has a direct connection to that lineage of the sons of God, and it's via the Mandeans. John the Baptist actually came out of the Mandean culture, not necessarily the Jewish. At one point, the Jewish and Mandean kind of came together. You see, and that's why it appears though John the Baptist came out of the Jewish tradition. But in truth, he came out of the Mandean culture. And the Mandeans say that they came from Sri Lanka originally. See, Sri Lanka was part of this huge continent of Lemuria. So basically, they're saying that they came from Lemuria. And they had a lineage of masters known as the Nasarai, and Nas is the word associated with serpents. So these were serpents. And they were descended from one of these Kumaras known as Mordigan or Sanat Kumara.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some case cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule. And this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
And possibly Nazareth.
Huh?
Nazareth.
Right. You find now the Nazaria was the sect of the Essenes. The Essenes were the Gnostics. Yeah, the word Gnostics used all over the place. But anyway, so when the Mandeans ended up in the Middle East, of course, they gave rise to, or out of that civilization came John the Baptist, who was a Nazarene. He was a direct lineage to one of these sons of God. And essentially what happened was that John the Baptist passed that lineage to Jesus, and then Jesus passed it to John the Apostle. Okay, not Saint Peter. That was a different branch. Okay, he passed it to John the Apostle. And then John created a lineage of what's known as the Johannites, and all the grand masters of the Johannites had the name of John. And this goes way back to this son of God whose name was John, or John himself. See, so it all starts because John is the master word for Gnostic wisdom. And so John is evolved from John. And John the Baptist, was the father of Gnosticism in the West. And so John the Baptist passes to Jesus to John the Apostle. And it was passed down a lineage of Johannites until the time of the Templars. Templars showed up. There was a patriarch of the Johannites called Theophilus, who decided to initiate the first Templar grandmaster, who was Judas Paon, into the Johannites, and actually made Judas Paon a grandmaster in the Johannite tradition. And so Judas Paon essentially became the master rabbi. And then when the Templars moved back into Europe, they brought with them that incredibly ancient lineage that originally came out of Sri Lanka. They brought it into here with them. And this is the goddess lineage, because the sons of God, as I said, they brought the wisdom of the goddess. They brought the wisdom of Kundalini. And that's the wisdom that the Templars brought back with them into Europe. And it was the wisdom that they were branded heretics for. But it was a wisdom that spread throughout Europe and became part of the secret societies of Freemasons and Rosicrucians.
That's interesting because, even Catholicism has its goddess component in Mary.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, just because all the pre-Christian traditions, they all honor the goddess, all of them. And in fact, the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, was originally Father, Son, and Mother. And they were considered to be equal manifestations of the Godhead. But they were equal, And of course, now it's changed to Father, Son, Holy Ghost, and people have lost that understanding of what the Holy Ghost is. The Holy Ghost is basically Kundalini. And the Holy Ghost is synonymous with the serpent energy. When they are acknowledging the Holy Ghost, they're basically acknowledging the serpent itself, if they know it or not.
Uh-huh. That's fascinating.
Because I was just going to mention that John the Baptist, when he was born, it says in the Bible, he was full of the Holy Spirit. Well, he was full of Kundalini. The Holy Spirit
Yeah, he jumped in Elizabeth's womb, and
that's
what the Kundalini does, is it jumps.
Yeah.
Up your spine.
That's right. He was one of the greatest Kundalini masters ever. And in fact, the Templars considered him in some ways to be greater than Jesus.
Fascinating. Well, what's the connection then to Peru? I guess, is that, was that your beginning point or a midpoint, or how did you get on your medicine path?
Monastery of the Seven Rays. You can mystery school, and so by doing that, we gained alignment to Maramamudu and to the Masters of Lemuria. You know, so even though we didn't make it, or I didn't make it at that time to the monastery, I still got connected to Lemuria and the monastery to that initiation. But it was a few years later that Jorge Luis Delgado and myself, we actually made an expedition into the Secret Valley to find the monastery, and we got very, very close to it. We actually got to this holy mountain that looked like a mountain. It looks like they took a mountain and they carved a figure of a man out of it. And we got to this mountain, and we just sat in front of it, and this incredible energy came out of the mountain right into us, and we all had this big heart awakening. And we knew at that time we didn't need to go any further, you know, that we had accomplished what we had come there to do, because if we found the monastery, it would have been the same thing. The work would have been open our hearts.
Right.
So in a sense, we did find it. We found this valley that we know is the place of the Lemurian machine. It's full of incredible energy. It's just an amazing place.
Well, I'm a Peru... I have some Cherokee friends that went down 3 or 4 years ago, and they were visiting with Don Enrique. I think he's, how do you pronounce it? Cheche Mayan?
Oh,
Cheche. Cheche Mayan?
Cheche Mayan.
And they asked him what was there any connection between the Maya and the Cherokee? And he just looked at them and said, well, we're the same people. And he says, if you don't believe me, they'll tell you what city to go to in Egypt and where in the city to prove that to yourself. And then we start thinking about, well, the Cherokee have got a calendar, you know, based on the Venus transit. And not a lot of people know that, but you know, if you start looking into the Manataka stone, which was kept in a cave... down on Hot Springs, Arkansas, and confiscated by the government, but there's a picture of a drawing of it, and it has very obviously Mayan symbols on it. So,
but, yeah, I think that the Mayans definitely have connections with a lot of tribes. You mentioned the Hopis, for example. I was down in Palenque just last fall. We did a special crystal skull activation where we worked to activate a lot of the temples down there. And so one thing that I found out is that Palenque was actually red in color when they first built it. And the story goes that, the Hopis say that in their history, that they were taught by the Kachina people in a place called Palenque, which means red house. And the people in Palenque say that Palenque is their red house, where they came for the teachings from the
Venus. How about that?
Yeah.
Well, the reason why I brought up the Cherokee and the Maya is that my teacher, John Red Hat, who was born into the Kitsua Nighthawk, the original Kitsua Nighthawk Society, which is the spiritual core of the Cherokee Nation, he taught me that his grandparents taught him that after we came up from Mexico the second time, the Ozarks was our original home, in other words, southern Missouri, northern Arkansas, and that we moved from here into the Mississippi Valley, and that's where we encountered the Mound Builders, fought a war with them, stopped that war by intermarrying. And then as we encountered the Iroquois, we fought a war with them, and we stopped that war by agreeing to stop speaking our own language. So the ethnologists believe that we're Iroquoian, but we're not. We have more of a connection, apparently, with the Maya because of the calendar and the Vedic cycle. Plus, we're the... I believe we're the only people that work with crystals. I understand most Native Americans just do not want to have anything to do with crystals. And It's just kind of different. I understand anciently the Cherokee and the Hopi were known as the Twin Fires. Professor Tim Jones, double doctor of archaeology and ethnology, University of Arizona, and he didn't do the field work, but he looked at the data from a lot of archaeological digs in the Missouri Arkansas area and realized a lot of these places were old stomp grounds and only Cherokees that had stomps. He says, well, that was Cherokee. I mean, he was able to scientifically prove back 800 years. And we'll prove eventually about 1,500 years that this was our headquarters, so to speak, after we came up here the second time. But we've gone back and forth and migrated back and forth from Mexico several times. Our wampum belts are tied with Mexican seaweed. So apparently we have a strong connection with the Mayans, but on the Cherokee Nation of Mexico website, there are pictures of obviously non-Mayan people wearing turbans or turban-like, you know, wrapped around their head. But they have, instead of having an aquiline nose, they have almost a ski-jump nose. And that is one of the characteristics of they call it the Wild Potato Clan, but it's actually the Ketua Clan, which is the people of the original towns. So, apparently we lived around the Maya, and the Hopi when we were, down south of the border, but were independent of them and had our own movements and our own people. And, our history says that there were certain people that we avoided or moved on because of things that were going on. I thought I'd bring that up because of the connection. The other thing about Peru I wanted to mention is that...
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put
it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Well, I was going to college. We were required to take religion courses. And in one of the courses, one of the religion professors mentioned that he mentioned that corn in most of the world, I believe, is 13 chromosomes. He said, but in Peru and all throughout the South Pacific, the corn is 9 chromosomes. So that, you know, kind of some hint there.
Right, right. Well, the corn, apparently, and also potatoes, which become staples of the entire world, came out of Peru. And the translation of the name Peru is the garden, such as Garden of Eden, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Some people think it was the Garden of Eden of this
That's what Asa Galucci taught L. Taylor Hansen. She wrote in her book Ancient Atlantic about the old red land, and she had apparently like a stone box of some kind. And when he saw it, he kind of went, you know, what is that? You know, where'd you get that? And she says, well, it was an archaeological find. And he was more interested in what was inside it and wondered, well, you know, where's the dirt that was in it? And he was disappointed to find out that it had probably been dumped out. He says, that's too bad because that would have been dirt from the old red land.
Still by extraterrestrials from another planet.
What do you think? My own people say that we came from an island off the coast of South America that sank. Mm-hmm. And very possibly. But
which coast is the east or west coast?
Well, or very possibly could have been what's in Antarctica, because Plato talked about the thumb of Atlantis, and of course Antarctica does have a thumb. And Antarctica, if you look at it from over the southern pole, it's connected to all the world's oceans. It's literally in the middle of all the world's oceans, and under different climatic situation, it's a darn good candidate. There's been a lot of strange going on down there. A few months ago, there was some kind of a time vortex or something that was discovered. There was a kind of a gray mist cloud that was kind of twisting, and apparently they sent up some weather balloons and discovered that the balloons were tethered, and when they pulled them back down several times, the chronometer would come back 30 years earlier, reading 30 years earlier. So apparently, and then there's, you can't keep secrets of everything. I understand there's most of the major astronomers in the world have been down in Antarctica for the last few months. Of course, now you had Sedna discovered here not too long ago. And it was discovered right in the place that the Zeta said that Planet X would be discovered last May. And so it showed up right exactly the place. You know, the plane of the ecliptic is where the planets run on. And, I guess the plane 360 degrees around a belt around the Earth, and maybe 5 or 10 degrees, up or down. But there was maybe 1 degree of arc difference between where the Zeta said that Planet X would be discovered and where Sedna was discovered, and it's red. This is light. So there's a lot of interesting things going on in the world right now.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. I'm sure you've read Voices of Our Ancestors by Jung.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think of that? It sounds like he's saying that you all came from Atlantis.
Yeah, or... all the Cthulhu origin story says is that that our elders were playing with abusing something called white fire, and that because of that abuse, certain ones among us knew that there was going to be a catastrophe, so we left. And we were told that we'd come to this place, and we were given a prophecy that said that we would be pushed westward, and that if we didn't return east, of course that's west is the direction of death, if we didn't return east, that we would be pushed all the way to the Pacific Ocean and onto the boat, and from there, death. And there is a return to traditionalism among Cherokees, and I'm sure there's some kind of a connection to Atlantis, Lemuria, but there has to be some kind of a connection with Sumeria, because the Hebrew traditions, most of them come out of Sumeria, but there's literally dozens and maybe even hundreds of parallels between Cherokee culture, clothing, language, burial customs, and those of the Hebrews. And some people in the middle 1700s thought, well, they had to be related, but it's very obviously that we both come from a similar source. And, for instance, the Hebrew, one of the symbols of their nation is a woman clothed with light, with the sun and the moon. I can't remember if it's standing on the sun with the moon in her hair, but they're identical symbols. And of course the traditions of the cities of refuge for man killers, and it's just a hundred other things, about
right.
Their priesthood and belief and practice. And
well, there's also the legend of Enki or Oannes, with the culture bearer of the Sumerians, and
mm-hmm.
That he came from Delmon, which many people think is Atlantis, so
right. I know, you know, Gianni, in some circles was derided up until, probably about 1994, you know, basically just kind of laughed at until a couple of elders from the Eastern Band, who had permission to start writing about Cherokee culture, they started communicating with her, and they were a father and son team, and the father actually joined Sunray, the member of their board of directors. So, most Cherokees have been Christianized. They really don't want to have anything to do with the old ways. They don't, our culture was basically gone by 1880, and people, there are people that would like to think that they could recreate it, but, how do you do that? We don't live as a tribe anymore, we don't live as clans, and the whole thing about the stomp dance is to teach people that, that every clan depends on another clan, every clan has a taboo item that the other clan must use, but they can't gather it themselves. They're dependent on somebody across the fire, and you realize there's this symbiosis that goes all the way around it and around the fire, and you realize, hey, somebody was really smart to set this system up, because it made everybody family groups dependent on other family groups, and could bring them into unity. But I thought that was really interesting when I learned about the stomp dance and about the different clans. But nowadays, people said for a long time, we're gonna have seven clans, but actually there was at least 14, and maybe upwards of in the 80s a number of clans. But through disease and migration, there are some clans, smaller clans absorbed into larger clans, and. But we're an ancient people, and we're very different from. I know the ethnologists and the archaeologists will tell you that the only place in the world that dolichocephalic or long-headed skulls are found in burials are along the seacoast, about anywhere in the world. You know, it's that long, thin, Egyptian-looking, right. And exactly, at sea coast or in the Appalachian mountain chain, completely surrounded by people that are obviously different, because their skeletons look different.
Right.
And of course, the Cherokees, we always had to have an outlet to the sea, and so I'm sure that there was some kind of connection with the Phoenician people, also known as the Maru, the Maori, and nowadays the Mauritanians, because they were red-skinned people. They wore red. They had a secret dye that they used for their clothing, and they stayed in their ships, and they were the traders. They moved around the planet. Somebody made that Piri Reis map, which showed the perfect geography of Antarctica before there was ice on it, and that map was floating around about 400 years ago with a Turkish admiral. The Phoenicians, L. Taylor Hansen wrote in that book, Ancient Atlantic, that Phoenician ships have been found like on Catalina Island and near La Brea Tar Pits. Currently, when the ocean levels were different, the LA River was longer, and they would go up to the tar pits because they needed pitch for the ships. And there have been actual whole ships that have been found. So that's seafaring culture. A lot of people think, there's no way that people were moving back and forth between Europe and North America, before just a few hundred years ago. But hey, I'm sorry. It's a proven fact scientifically that they've been moving around this planet for a long time.
Well, that's what Thor Heyerdahl proved. I mean, just through reed vessels made out of reed.
Mm-hmm.
It basically encompassed the whole entire globe.
Yeah, that's right. They had to have pitch for their ships, but these Phoenician ships, they were plank ships. They were plank ships. say that they had the problems with water logging like Heyerdahl had. What do you know about Brother Philip that wrote the book Secret of the Andes?
Well, Brother Philip is actually a pen name, you might say. It's actually the name of George Hunt Williamson.
Oh, see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow. But tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News and Primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
George Hunt Williamson was one of the people in the party that went down to Peru with Cedra. She went with a few other people.
Oh.
And George Hunt Williamson, he tried to find the monastery for a number of years, but as far as I know, he never made it there. As far as I know, that Sister Cedra was the only one that actually made it to the monastery. And so he kind of hung out and waited until she returned to the monastery, and after that, he interviewed her, and a lot of the information you got in Secret of the Andes is directly from Cedra.
Mm. Yeah, I've got one of the books on order. There's a link at prophecykeepers.com if people are interested in his book, and also there'll be one so they can buy your book.
Right. Well, when we were down looking for the monastery, we asked people, one, you heard about Sister Cedra, and you know about the monastery, and you know about George Moises, and they looked kind of, they say, no. They had heard about the monastery, that it kind of moves between dimensions. But they always talked about, there was a guy that kept coming down there to do research, and his name was Philippe. Well, you know, Philippe is Philip, or Brother Philip. And so it appears as though this guy, Philippe, was George Hunt Williamson. They kept returning down here to try to find the monastery, only he was able to. So this is a name that he just kind of acquired and used for himself as kind of a, you know, a secretive name.
Right. Well, it's Philippe. It's an interesting name because I was taught that when you break down, it's a Hebrew base word, and it consists of phi, L, and it. And it is a doubling. It's Mayan doubling is Zipsi. And phi and L have meanings also. Phi means a ruler. L means the flail or the scourge that, the pharaohs had a flail and a shepherd's crook. And so phi, L, and it means a ruler who comes with a scourge who would sit on two thrones. So the reason why I found that out was years ago when I started asking Creator to tell me things, I asked him what it was that was going to cause the forced migration of people out of the Rocky Mountain area to Mexico, before they migrated up the Missouri River to what's now Kansas City. And I said, well, what's going to make them have to move? And my body kind of started vibrating, you know, a little bit. And I heard a very, I didn't hear it audibly, but just this strong word came into my head was the flood. And I thought, the flood, it was years before, Gordon Michael Scallion was talking about the flooding of, most of the Western United States. And then I said, who are they going to follow? Who's going to lead them? And then I was told, Philip. Well, I said, Philip, And I just before that I'd been to a class in the area. A friend of mine had written a book called "Written by the Finger of God," and it was Joe Sampson, and it was an explanation of some of the codes that are embedded in names and phrases that run through Egyptian and Hebrew. And he had just finished explaining what phi, L, and it mean, and that was no coincidence. So, and I kind of just put it up on the shelf, and then when I found out about this Brother Philip thing, I said, well, that got my attention.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so that's the reason why I've been quizzing you about, Brother Philip. And,
all right.
And because it was something that was put, in front of me, oh, gee, in 1991, something like that. So I've been looking for it. And just some of the old teaching.
There's also I've heard that at one point George Williamson was trying to communicate intuitively with the residents of the Montessori Seminary, and at some point apparently he was able to channel some being that he referred to himself as. As Philip, or as a Brother Philip, So there could actually be a Brother Philip there.
Hmm.
It's possible.
But
that's as much as I've heard of
right.
Brother Philip.
Yeah. Well, I know the book was first published in Spanish in 1961, and then shortly thereafter in English. But well, I guess both of them were in London, and I guess Leaves of Grass picked it up in 1974, I believe.
Right. There's actually an organization in Spain today that's calling themselves the Brotherhood of the Seven Rays. And I think it's, I don't know exactly their whole history, if they really are connected to the Seven Rays, but apparently some knowledge from the Montessori Seven Rays in Peru eventually got to Spain, and then they created this order around it. So I don't know the whole history of it, but it's involved with the history of Gnosticism in Europe. It was considered to be a branch of Gnosticism, and it's also in some ways connected, I guess, to the Templars and the revival of the Templars in the 1800s. So, which is interesting, considering that the Templars are descended from one of the Kumaras who built this monastery in the Seven Rays.
If my memory serves me correctly, the Sephardic Jews, which were they mainly concentrated in the area around Spain, I think the Sephardim and the Cathars were more identified with Gnosticism than any really two groups of people. Unless my memory's not serving me correctly, but
there was John the Baptist was the father of Gnosticism. I think that certainly the Jewish prophets were involved with Gnosticism, definitely. But it was through John the Baptist that the branches, the Western branches of Gnosticism, were first founded. So he founded one through Jesus, and then John the Apostle that became the Johannine, but there was also other branches, for example, Simon convicts for sure. And they were, you know, directly from John the Baptist. And actually the Cathars apparently were influenced by the Bogomils, who were a Gnostic order in Bulgaria. And the Bogomils apparently were descended or the Paulicans, which were a Jewish Gnostic sect. And so there is that connection. But one of the main connections, interestingly enough, is that the Cathars were very much related to the Manichaeism religion from the prophet Mani. And the prophet Mani was actually, he was born into the Mandean religion. He was born in Iraq, the Mandean tradition. So he was essentially spreading around the world the same tradition that John the Baptist was. They were both born with the same tradition. And so Mani actually he spread Gnosticism all the way from Spain all the way to China. And so there was a lot of his influence in Europe when the Cathars were formed, and so they assimilated a lot of his knowledge. So essentially the Cathars were also very much connected.
Well, would you say that the definition of Gnosticism is praying and then getting an answer, which is basically praying and meditating?
It's basically developing, activating your intuition, and through the activation of that intuition, knowledge comes, intuitive knowledge comes.
Right.
You can say it's coming from your higher self. You can say it's coming from other planets and dimensions and stars. Whatever you want to say, but it's coming to you from someplace. It's coming to you intuitively. It's like, you know, this aha, yeah, that's right. That's the answer. Well, that's pure Gnosticism. You know, it's not based upon intellectual rationalization. It's not based on a book.
Oh, no.
It's based on pure wisdom coming through you. You know, and ultimately leads to the realization of I am God. God exists within me as me. That's kind of the culmination of Gnosticism. That's the highest form, you might say. And wherever I look, I see a manifestation of myself. I am this whole entire universe, and I've created it. That's the highest manifestation.
Well, I know when Creator started speaking to me in 83, and by 98, in the 80s, he told me that, well, this is your first, there's going to be a step on your wife's life during the dark of the moon. And I looked for it to happen right away. Well, right after I was told that, she was diagnosed with breast cancer, lost the first breast, and then succumbed to it 13 years later. And then I remembered that what I was told back in 83 and checked the calendar. Sure enough, she passed away right in the middle of a three-day dark of the moon period, and right in the middle of it at noon. And I thought that was interesting. But so finally, in 98, he was telling me some things that were going to happen 7 years later, which is we're just about there. And so finally, I asked him, "Well, who are you? You know, you've been telling me these things all these years, and a couple weeks later." And it always happens just as I'm waking up. He just came to me and said, first in a whisper, he said, "I am. I am." And I woke up and went, "Oh, okay.
Right.
And there we are." Because that's the Old Testament, the people of Israel were told that there was a name that only the high priest could use.
Right.
Which was the Yod-Heh, Vod-Heh, but the other name that just anybody could use was Ahaya, which means I am.
That's right.
And,
that's the high point. That's the combination of Gnosticism. That's the, be still and know that I am God, right? You know,
right.
That's the experience of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Still the mind, and then, what bubbles up is that revelation of I am God,
right.
I am, or just simply I am.
Right, yeah. It's a fascinating experience because when you hear these things, you know that it's not, you know, these things that are being told to you are not coming from your own mind. They're kind of like, oh, you know, gee, that wasn't me. You know, that didn't come from my head, my brain. And it's an absolute knowing that it is knowledge that comes from outside yourself. And you really need to keep a diary or a journal, because you can write down these things when you hear them, because some of these things will happen later. They'll be fulfilled later, and you get bits and pieces here and there, and you need to kind of learn to deal with and manage it also. And I know I was listening to Gordon Michael Scallion talking to George Murray the other night, and that was his advice to everybody. And actually, in the Bible, in Habakkuk, you know, it was saying, you know, write down your visions and, you know, what you're told, and in journals, so they can begin to make sense to you. And the Gnostics, they had to be stamped out, because you can't control the mind of someone who has a direct connection to Creator.
Exactly. Exactly right. Well, of course, I think they also thought that if you let your mind wander, well, what you're going to do? You know, what's going to happen is that you're going to get Lutheran talk to you.
No. Well, that's the first thing anybody supposes when,
right.
You know, you know, even in the in the religions that are tolerant of personal revelation, when you get some, the first thing they think, oh, it's the devil, you know. That was the funniest thing. You know, there's one religion in particular, which I won't name, that is an American religion. It was totally based on personal revelation and an ancient book. But, you know, nowadays, you know, it's become an Orthodox religion, and anybody that you know, gets any kind of revelation, even though the scriptures say you're supposed to, you're always looked at as some kind of a threat. You know, so it just seems like, unless there's some kind of a refreshing every once in a while, or heavenly messengers, or whatever you want to call them, things tend to stagnate. Because I know that the people in Jerusalem only live that all things common lifestyle that was taught by Jesus, you know, for about 50 years, and the account is that it was lived over here in this hemisphere for about 200 years. Eventually it breaks down. Now, let me ask you something. Is there any tradition or prediction of a group of three or four messengers that travel around together or will appear someday? Because I was told in 99 that there were going to be three or four messages that were going to be coming this year.
Three or four. Are they, would they be kind of are they brothers or a brotherhood or part of the same organization, or are they related?
I was just told that they would be coming, that they've been trying to come for the last 400 years. They've been unable to come because the people have not been ready, but they were coming. And I heard this in August 2000. They're coming in 4 years, so get ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, what comes to mind is that that could have been a name or an image of the sons of God, or the return of the sons of God, because according to Hindu tradition, when the original arrival of the sons of God is represented as four twin boys.
Hmm.
You know, and although there were many more of them.
Four twins?
That is only four.
You mean quadruplets that all look the same?
They look the same because there's a symbology behind that.
No.
They all look like very young boys because they were immortal. They were eternally young.
Right.
And they also looked like young boys because they were kind of asexual. They were more androgynous, like young boys were.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is- is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated, freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now.
Put it under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
Yeah, I know there's a tradition of this, you know, the three that visited the Hopi. You've got the three Nephites of Book of Mormon tradition, and they worked with John the Revelator, so that makes four. And then in the Iroquois Good News Religion, which was revealed in 1830, even before Mormonism was founded, that religion was revealed by three Indians that walked above the ground, and they reported to a fourth man. Hansen Lake originally saw the three messengers and were told that they reported to a fourth who was in Creator's Land giving a report, and later on he met the fourth. So you've got this thing of three or four immortals and a bunch of different traditions, and then that I was told that they were going to be coming this year, you know, told in 2000, so I thought I'd ask you. I was told 2005 was going to be known as, I was told 2005 in the future will be known as the year of the great havoc, because the weather will become so bad on the planet that it's going to cause a lot of disruption of communication systems, computers. So, you know, I knew something was up for 2005. We were living 22 miles south of Moab, Utah, my family and I. And on that day, according to newspaper accounts, there was a place called Rocky Ridge, which is where the Navajo have been holding a sun dance for a long time. And there's an old woman that lived there that had not spoken for many years, living with her daughter-in-law. And all of a sudden, kind of a whistle, kind of like, was heard. And she spoke up and said, "We're going to have company." And kind of a boom was heard. And so the younger woman looked out the front door, and there were two beings standing inside a circle of cornmeal. And they came with a message. And they said that the Navajo people, so it was very similar to message to what was given to Wovoka, that the people needed to get back to their own language and stop, needed to stop eating the food that was introduced by whites, and that they weren't taking care of their prayers and oblations that were made in the four holy mountains and so forth and so on. And they were told, basically told, if you don't start doing this, you're going to reap the consequences. And I heard about that later in the month, but the day before, my son and I were on the roof of our mobile home, and we just moved into this place that was 300 acres owned by a mining company, and we got to live there and caretake the place. And there was a swamp cooler up on the roof, and we had to change out the pads for the evaporative cooler. And my son and I are both up on the roof working on it, and it's a very windy day. And this little voice just said, "Hey, why don't you look up?" And I looked up, and I gasped, and Joseph looked at me, and he looked up. We both saw an eagle. Just, you can only see it for a minute, but this eagle was made of a cloud, wingspan of about a mile, probably about 4,000 or 5,000 feet up. Every possible detail you could imagine on an eagle, but white on white, didn't have any color, including the trailing edges of the feathers, absolutely perfectly formed. And that kind of shook us up, and a couple weeks later, I was downtown Moab, and it was a young Navajo couple, and I said, I had found out about what happened at Rocky Ridge. I said, "Hey, you know, what do you think about what happened?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "That's really interesting." And I said, "Well, let me tell you what happened to me the day before." And I told them about the eagle cloud formation. And the two of them looked at me, and they looked at each other, and they said, "You're telling me that you're, you know, Belagana, who's, you know, white or looks white, and that you saw that?" And I said, "Yeah." And they said, "Well," they said, the male said, "Well, my mother is a traditional Navajo. She lives out of Kanta, which is about 110 miles south of where I live. And he said that his mother and several other traditionalists also saw the same eagle cloud formation the same day I did." And all in their different places. The day before these two Navajo deities showed up. And as I recall, I've since looked at the map and know how the intersection was oriented, and I know what direction that eagle was facing, and he was facing directly toward the four corners, the four common borders of Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah. So that was really kind of an interesting experience. I know you live in Sedona, which is a special place.
The power of the five again, huh?
It really is, and that was that happened on May 5th. Those two deities appeared, and that was 4 years before that May 5th, 2000 lineup that everybody was kind of excited about, and
right.
Everything just kind of continues to move on, and little by little, you know, more and more gets revealed, a little more every year, and we don't live in the same world that we grew up in, do we?
That's for sure. That's for sure.
changing so quickly.
Well, you're in
Flagstaff. What is this plan all about these days?
Are you in Flagstaff or Sedona?
We're in Sedona right now.
Oh. If you need some computer work done in Sedona, there's a friend of mine there. His name is Michael Madsen. He's a Dane, Danish fella, good-looking blonde fella in his early 30s. And he and his wife moved out there about a year and a half ago. And they're both in this area, really special people.
Up your stuff. Mm-hmm. So she's not going to come up big time. And if I say it's the Kundalini, it was America. You know, it's all those red rocks. It's got high concentrations of iron and crystal.
Mm-hmm.
By walking on these red rocks, it stimulates the root chakra, stimulates the activation of Kundalini. You know,
and gold. And gold. We lived in Moab. We're right in that Arches National Park area. It's all red rock.
Oh, uh-huh.
And for a while, you know, we were only, you know, 50 miles north of Monticello, Utah, which is, you know, 30, 40 miles from Four Corners. But for a while, we lived in we had a friend that bought well, he didn't buy, he was leasing a square mile from the state of Utah that, it was like a big sandstone escarpment, about 400 feet high. Well, the very beginning scene of Geronimo with Wes Studi was filmed right out in front. If you're, next time you watch that, you can see that they kept a very low camera angle. If they had raised it 1 degree, you would have been able to see the bed and breakfast and the houses that this guy had blasted back into the rocks. And we lived back in there, and they ran, you know, generator about 5 hours a night, and we'd charge up our golf cart batteries, and when it got dark, we'd flip on the inverter, and we'd have TV and VCR and lights for a few hours, and a battery charge. But at night, there was no electrical field, everything was turned off, and when you'd wake up in the morning, you would hear the and I could hear volume spikes. My wife, you know, could hear it also. She couldn't hear the spikes, and it would sound like. And I would say, "Hey, you hear that?" She said, "Yeah." And I said, "What?" I said, "Is this the frequency you hear? You know, you hear it?" And I sang it to her, and she said, "Yeah, that's it." And I said, "Well," I said, "I hear it being amplified up and down." She said she couldn't hear that, but a lot of strange things happened in there. I know one morning, I was actually awake, and I could hear a Jafar horn being blown in my left ear, which was in the pillow. And I'd been awake for a good minute or so, and I was talking to my wife as I heard in my left ear to the pillow, and I could hear her in my right ear. I heard this, you know, like a Jafar horn that the Jewish priest would blow, gather the people in. A lot of really interesting things, and even after we moved away from that, what's called Rockland Ranch, we moved over to this mining company property. You know, we'd be gardening, we had as much water as we needed because there was a, you know, a 4-inch pipe that the mining company had fouled on a spring, and it piped it in for several miles, a couple miles away, and was down here. We had tons of water. So we'd garden at night, and when there wasn't any traffic along the highway, which is only about 35 or 10 minutes, we hear that hum. And then we take about, you know, all I have to do is just look at the ground. You can see the quartz crystal. You knew that that they could extract gold out of that red rock. And if you ever see fine crystal that has a reddish hue, it's because it's got a tiny little bit of gold in it. So you got a lot of interesting minerals down there, and we never did quite figure out what was causing the hum, but we sure heard it. We sure heard it. That Red Rock area is a really, really special and sacred area. It is. Well, you feel talked out?
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandim reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandim reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Well, I'm getting to that point. I'd like to maybe say a few more things about what I do.
Absolutely.
Well, besides having a North National Order of Templars here in Sedona, that well, just now we are we're having tours every year where we're going to go to Scotland for Osmond Chapel and up to the northern part of Scotland for initiation into the order. And eventually we're also having initiations here, and you know, if people want to get in touch with me, I can put them on my mailing list, and I also put out a monthly email newsletter. They would like to go to my website, which is www.serpentsofwisdom.com. You gotta write it together, serpentsofwisdom.com. Mm-hmm. Then you'll see everything that I'm doing. And it also provides you with the ability to sign up for the newsletter through that website. Another website that you might, people might want to visit is bodymindspiritjourneys.com.
Oh, that's your travel, yeah.
Yeah, because I lead tours all over the world. Besides England, Scotland, I lead tours to Peru, Egypt. We have incredible fall, which I'll be collating with David Hatcher, Childress, and Christopher Dunn, and some of the big names related to Egyptology and pyramid technology. That's coming up this fall.
Do you do any work with Humboldt's men down in...
Yeah, well, when I was down last September for the crystal activation, I was working with Humboldt. I'm going to be leading a tour down to... September, provided I get enough interest on it, where we will be working with Humboldt. That'll be around the equinox this year. So you can find out about that tour and all the other tours by just going to www.bodymindspiritjourneys.com. But you can also call us up if you like. We have an 800 number. It's 800-231-9811. And we'll be happy to answer your questions, 800-231-9811. And so we go, you know, we go all over the world. You know, we plan to have a tour to India, for example, next January. And we'll be going to Sri Lanka. We talked about Sri Lanka. We'll be going to that place, that holy place where the Son of God is worshipped in the temples there. And we're going to a number of places in India, the ashram of Bhante Vrindavana Maya, Master, and up to Varanasi, the holiest city of the Hindus on the Ganges. So it's incredible.
What time of year?
That's going to be in January.
Oh, yeah.
That's really the only time that's
going to be
in the South India.
Yeah.
Or the West India. You know, either that or you're going to get rained up during the monsoon. But altogether, I probably lived in India 3 years. I know the So that's going to be a very powerful tour. Next year, we also want to have a tour. It's going to be a kind of a Templar tour throughout France. Go to the places that the Templars.
And this broadcast may be picked up in the future by broadcast radio stations, and so that's good you gave out the number. And sounds like you're on the road a lot.
Well, some years I am more than others. It all depends on, if we're able to fill up our tours. We have to get a certain quota.
Right.
So some years, there's years I've been down to Peru as much as four times, just to Peru. And then for another years where it hasn't been so busy. Since 9/11, not as many people have been wanting to travel. They've been, in a lot of fear about traveling. And of course, money has been a problem because of the economy, But travel seems to be picking up, and more and more people are becoming interested in it. And it's a good time to do it because a lot of these places are being reactivated, like the Great Pyramid. In our Egypt tour, we take people right in the pyramid, right into the King's Chamber, where they can lay down in the sarcophagus.
Were you in Mexico, one of the solstices, I guess, is a time when a serpent appears on one of the temples?
That's during the equinox. I actually haven't made it down there at that time. I've been down the equinox, but not
at I had some guests, the reason why I had some guests yesterday, that they said that they travel a bit during this time of year, and they said they end up with the most interesting places at the most interesting times, and they said they ended up at Chichen Itza. It just happened to be on that day, and they said there were tens of thousands of Indians and people that were there to watch the serpent appear on the side of the temple. And they said it was really comical because she had gotten up to the top of the pyramid and had to crawl back down backwards while everybody was laughing at her.
Yeah, I might have been right there with her.
Exactly.
But the thing about the equinox all around the world has been the main time for Kundalini activation. Thus the tendency of the serpent appear. And why is it? Because you've got a balance of male female. The serpent, the primal serpent, is androgynous, is male female united. You talked about the caduceus. That's the two serpents of the caduceus. Those represent the male-female aspects of the primal serpent. If you unite those together, what you get is the primal androgynous serpent. On the caduceus, they represent the male-female aspects of the one primal serpent.
Well, I know.
In our body, they're represented as the edas, the galenades, that spiral around our spine. When they come together at the base of the spine, the root chakra, the bulatara, where they unite to become kundalini energy.
I know that when I hear what I believe is creative, that he ostensibly sounds like a male voice, but the echoes are female. It's really interesting. It's a very powerful voice, but the echoes, the overtones are female.
That's true, because the goddess, the thing that people don't quite understand is the goddess is a part of God, right? They're interconnected, they're intertwined. So God speaks through his power, which is the goddess.
Right.
They're one and the same. They're always there. And if you look on the molecular level, the atomic level, matter is always in movement. Well, what keeps it in movement is the spirit in matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't separate spirit and matter. They've always been interconnected. This is why the icons in the East, the Far East, have the goddess in eternally embraced together. Because you can't separate the two.
Maybe that's why it says in the Bible there's no marriage or giving in marriage to heaven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So exactly.
If you say the goddess is this, you're also saying the goddess is this, because there's no interconnection. If you say the god is this, you're also saying the goddess is this.
Right.
Because they're not separate. You can't separate the two.
Right, absolutely. Well, we sure appreciate you being with Prophecy Keepers Radio, and we'll have an eternal link up to you in both your websites, and we'll create a little radio spot during the interview and remind people where who you are and what you have to offer. And,
that'd be great. And if you come to Sedona, please look me up. Definitely email me ahead of time to let me know you're coming.
Absolutely.
But definitely look me up, because I can show you a part of Sedona.
sure. And we'll get the word out to some. I think my friends in Sedona have a little network, email network, and we'll make sure folks know. See, this show will be available in perpetuity for free for anybody to listen. And if you want to upload a copy of it over to your website, you're welcome to, or whatever you want to do, we'll work that out. Well, we sure appreciate you being with us, with us this evening.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
I'll see you. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Well, I cannot even imagine. And just for example, last night, you did a show last night that was 90 minutes starting at 7:30.
That's right.
Then you went through that. Then you came here. You're here this morning.
That's right.
Doing all of this.
It's nonstop. I don't sleep anymore.
No. All right. So where do you get the energy? Seriously. I mean, look at you.
Well,
I mean, we've known each other a long time. Yeah. We've passed. You don't ever get older.
Well, thank you. It's quite funny because, you know, people are kind of shocked when they hear that I'm 54 years old, and they say, how do you keep your youth? I have found something, Dr. Phil, that I think is the closest thing to the fountain of youth.
Oh, you do have a secret.
I have a secret, and I've never really talked about it. Well, I've been doing this for the last 2 years. It's called Protandem, and it works. And I'm telling everybody about this.
You feel differently.
I do.
Because you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you're hitting the times. You're getting where you're supposed to be.
I have
you're
to doing be on the spot all the time.
Now, I've got three sisters, and we get along great 1,500 miles apart. I cannot imagine.
It takes me 1,600 miles.
Yeah, but I can't imagine working with my sister every day. What do you do when you have disagreements? Because you have to have disagreements, right? Because
well,
you're both producers.
Yeah, we're both producers, and that's difficult because we're both type A. And you're going to butt heads. What's really interesting about the Donnie Marie duo is that it doesn't really matter how much we butt the heads when that curtain goes.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Everybody, Marie's going to stay. You keep it here because up next, she's going to set the record straight about a long-standing rumor. Don't miss
Uh-oh.
It. We're back with the very blonde Marie Osmond.
Hello.
And during the commercial, we were talking, and Marie was letting me know. I did not realize that she is one of the co-founders of the Children's Miracle Network, which it's been about 30 years since it's been in existence and raised billions of dollars for all the proceeds.
Well, this year we'll reach $5 billion for children. And the best part, it's really fun, is that 100% of it has gone to the children.
Good
so,
for you.
Yeah, it's really cool, very unique, nothing like it. It's the number one charity out there for kids of its kind.
And she was saying that she doesn't lend her name to a lot of things, but tell us about your project with the Wise Food Company.
I'm so excited, you guys. You know, I get asked to endorse a lot of things, and my dad always said, two things you protect, your beliefs, your values, and your good name.
Mm-hmm.
So don't lend it out to everything. You know, make sure that you're doing things that you really, really believe in. That is a crazy ring. Shut up.
Thank you.
Okay,
thanks,
anyway,
Marie.
Sorry, I'm blonde. No. So anyway, I come from this family where we used food storage. I know that sounds crazy, But with everything that's been going on, look at Sandy. Just here alone,
yes.
What was it, like $78 billion of damage?
Mm-hmm.
Look at the fires that are going on and the tornadoes and all of that. To not be prepared, we have car insurance, we have health insurance. Why do we not have food? I have done this my whole life. This company has only been in existence now for 4 years, but of all the companies, this is the best.
What
the
meals,
it's called Wise. Mm-hmm. The meals are about $1 a serving. It's the best food you've ever tasted. It's not your grandma's food. It's not beans and rice and gross stuff.
How do you make it?
Literally, it stores for 25 years. Put it under your bed, and you open up a package, put water, and you eat it. Put it in your car, you know, if you get on a tornado or whatever.
Yeah, when you're hard-pressed and you want something to eat.
I put two meals in the bottom of my children's backpacks that they take to school in case something happens, so I know they always have something to eat. I'm a mother. I'm a child advocate. And I could, seriously, guys, I could lend my name to a bazillion things. But I believe in this, and I know that this company is the best, I swear to you.
Well, so are you.
No, I did.
Yes, I've enjoyed our conversation.
You're the best.
I've really enjoyed meeting you, Marie.
Oh, you're so darling.
Osmond.
Yeah.
Marie Osmond,
call me
everybody.
Marie.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes. So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn.